This is STD Podcast. Earlier this year, STD Prevention Online started a new collaboration with the journal Sexually Transmitted Diseases. Under the title The Real World of STD Prevention, the journal publishes a selection of open access articles that focus on the interface between research and practice and are of particular interest for those working in STD clinical care and prevention programs. Among others, these papers report on practice interventions that assist with the implementation of new policies and guidelines. One such guideline, developed and supported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, is that all patients between the ages of 13 and 64 who make a visit to a healthcare facility in the US should have an HIV test done at least once. That seems pretty straightforward. However, despite good intentions and policy development, the widespread implementation of this guideline is not a given and may face many practical stumble blocks. This month's installment of The Real World of STD Prevention features a successful intervention to enhance HIV testing in the healthcare system of the Veterans Administration. Here to talk about the study is Dr. Henry Anaya. Dr. Anaya is a research scientist with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and is on the faculty at the UCLA David Gavin School of Medicine. He has been the principal investigator on a number of VA studies and has published extensively about them. Welcome to the podcast, Henry.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Great, great. Let me first ask you, why did you choose the VA population for this particular study?
Well, veterans within the VA healthcare system have a higher than average level of HIV seroprevalence infection. And so the VA population is an ideal study from which to do any type of HIV prevention or HIV mitigation work.
And so, but you chose particular clinics or particular cities for this particular project. Was that also to do with the higher prevalence?
It is. When we began the study, we specifically wanted to focus on areas of the country that were more hard hit by HIV than not. And so, you know, after a lot of consultation with VA clinics and VA hospitals nationwide, the hospitals that we did decide to go with, you know, we had a limited amount of budget, so we had to narrow our focus. So we picked metropolitan areas that had high known HIV seroprevalence. The sites in our study were Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and Houston, Texas.
I see. So tell us a bit more about how the intervention was done.
Sure. So the way that the current HIV testing system in the VA works is basically a traditional venipuncture testing. And what venipuncture testing is, for those who don't know, is basically a needle stick. You go into your doctor's office, and if you want an HIV test, you ask your doctor, and he or she will stick you with a needle, will draw blood, and then they run the chemicals that will determine whether you have the infection or not. What we wanted to do was we wanted to eliminate that process because there are things wrong with that venipuncture-based method. And the main issue that's wrong with that method of testing is that it takes, you know, from the blood draw to the results, takes up anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks. And so a lot of times in the VA system and elsewhere, patients don't come back for their results. And sometimes it's very hard for a large healthcare system to get people their results. And so if someone happens to be HIV infected but doesn't come back for their results, don't necessarily know they're infected, and they could be passing the infection on to other people. So what we did is we wanted to introduce a new methodology for testing, which is HIV rapid testing. With rapid testing, there is no venipuncture. It's a swab of the mouth, and then you place that a chemical solution and you get your results in 20 minutes as opposed to 1 or 2 weeks. So while people are waiting to see their doctors in the waiting room, they could be notified of their results. And if they have HIV, then we can link them to care immediately. So there are a large number of benefits to this new modality of testing.
I see. But also the person who was offering testing was not necessarily the doctor, but it was the nurse. Was there a specific reason for that as well?
I'm sorry. That's a good point that you're bringing up. I failed to mention. Another part of the intervention was previous research that we've done on the topic of HIV shows that when you give the responsibility of HIV testing to doctors, they just weren't doing the test. And there's a variety of reasons for that. But the main reason is, especially with the VA population, veterans usually have a lot of other chronic conditions along with whatever else is going on with them. So a doctor at the VA has only about 20 or so minutes with each patient, and HIV, given all these other conditions that a veteran might have, the doctor just doesn't see that as a priority, so they won't initiate HIV testing. What we did to overcome that barrier to testing was to give the responsibility of testing to nurses who we found in previous research were much more likely to continue to offer HIV testing as opposed to doctors. So that was a different way of doing things, which, as you pointed out and mentioned, was giving the responsibility over to nurses.
Yes. And so was the test also part of kind of a structural kind of intervention, so to speak, where it was introduced as a standard of care or as an algorithm, or how was that handled?
Well, the way that we work with our research is when we pick a site, we come in and we tell the people, the key stakeholders at each site, what we're all about, what we're trying to propose, and we say, give us 6 months. Let us do this for 6 months. Let the nurses do it. Let the nurses get comfortable. A lot of times there's pushback from nurses because they already have a lot of things to do in the course of their daily activities. But we say, let's just give this a few months. Let's see if this is something you guys want to pursue. And at the end of 6 months, we're going to leave. And at that point, if you think this is interesting and important for your patient population, you either will continue the testing, or if you don't think this worked out for your site and you think this isn't important, then we'll never bother you again, and we just will leave.
Right.
But every site has adopted this as a new standard of care. So in terms of your structural issues that you mentioned, yes, we give them the opportunity to adopt this to their local conditions and see if this is something that they want to pursue once we leave.
Right. But you leave the implementation to them. You're not sort of impose an implementation structure on them, so to speak.
No. What we do is we them what we think works. Tell them, we've done this before. Here are some things you might want to think about when adopting this, but you're absolutely correct. We leave it up to them to adopt it the best way they think for their facility, but we do continue to be available to them by telephone or email in the event they have problems or questions. We support them along the way, but we do let the decisions for how to implement it stays with the facility. They can do it any way they see fit.
Okay, so looking at the results, it looks that the intervention really resulted in a remarkable increase in testing at both of your study sites. But if you looked overall, only 9 to 14% or so were ultimately tested. So what were still the main barriers to overcome? Or could you say something about that proportion that was ultimately tested?
Sure. So the reason why we had, you know, if you do that comparison and you say, well, overall, only 9 to 14% of people were tested, there's a reason for that, and that's because not all nurses were trained to do the testing. So we only had access to, you know, we couldn't go into a facility and say, you know, lend us every one of your nurses for 6 months. They would say, you know, we can't do that. But they would say, okay, we'll give you a slice of our nurses. So we'll give you 6 nurses for 6 months, or we'll give you 10 nurses. And so the reason you see that, it seems like it's a low number, but it's because not every nurse in every clinic was doing testing. But in the targeted clinics and with the targeted nurses for our intervention, we saw very high testing numbers. Numbers in the thousands. I mean, we were doing thousands of tests.
Right, right. And I think you also showed that the testing uptake was actually higher in subgroups of higher risk populations. Is that correct?
That is correct. We know from previous research and from our own research that veterans who, for example, engage in substance use, drug use, alcohol use, or are homeless, have much higher rates of HIV. And so we saw a higher rate of testing with those populations as well.
I see. You know, ultimately, you want to do these tests to identify new HIV infections. And if I get it right, you had 14 newly diagnosed HIV infections in your study. Now,
as we
know, earlier diagnosis results in costs, savings, not only from a clinical, but also from a prevention perspective. So have you done any cost-effectiveness analysis, or are you planning any of those analyses to compare the cost of the programs with the benefits of earlier diagnosis?
That's a very good question. And what we've done is cost-effectiveness analyses are very expensive to do.
Uh-huh.
And so given the budget contours for our research project, what we are able to do with the budgets that we're allowed to go forward with, is what is called a budget impact analysis. The difference between a budget impact and a cost effectiveness is cost effectiveness looks at HIV over a large swath of organizations like the VA. And like you say, we can do comparisons for the entire population and cost effectiveness for early diagnosis versus late diagnosis. A budget impact analysis, on the other hand, looks at the cost of implementing this program at this site. So VA managers, if they want to adopt this at other sites, they can look at the budget impact and say, okay, it costs roughly X amount of dollars in Houston or in Washington, D.C. to do this. If we want to adopt this, it will cost us roughly X number of dollars as well. There have been a lot of cost effectiveness analyses that have looked at early diagnosis versus late diagnosis and how much money society saves. We aren't really equipped to do that, but there are a variety of studies out there, and I can, a couple of authors that have done a lot of great work on that are Doug Owens and Jillian Sanders at Stanford and Duke. They are our partners, and they've done a lot of that work.
I see. So at the end of the day, Henry, what lessons were learned? And most importantly, for these sites that implemented this as a study, did they find it of sufficient benefit to continue doing this?
They did. As I mentioned in the earlier part of this chat, all study sites have now adopted this as a new standard of care. Los Angeles, Houston, and Washington, D.C. have now adopted HIV rapid testing in primary care clinics as the new standard of care and nurse-initiated testing. So the nurses are actually now doing it. And it's very successful. I get a lot of feedback from our study sites up to this day, and people are telling me at all of our sites that they really love the new technology, and it's working out great for them. In terms of what we learned, this isn't the first time we've done this, so each site is a little different, but what we have learned from all of our study sites is that implementation of nurse-initiated HIV rapid testing is something that most sites can adopt and is pretty easy to adopt as long as, you know, the clinics buy into this. And we just ask that they give us a little time, let them adopt it to their own local conditions, and ultimately, usually, they end up wanting to adopt this as a new standard of care. So that seems to be consistent throughout our research.
Right. So as a result of this, so are there other sites out of the study sites, am I understanding you, that are now considering adopting this as well, or are you trying to expand beyond the original study sites?
Yes, we are. Not only are we trying to spread the adoption of this in other primary care clinics, but we are engaged in additional research, which is looking to implement HIV nurse-initiated HIV rapid testing in different clinical domains. Right now, we're targeting a VA substance use disorder clinic. The Veterans Health Administration has clinics devoted specifically to veterans with substance use disorders. And since, as I mentioned earlier, they do have a higher a priori HIV seroprevalence, we have targeted those type of clinical clinics to implement this type of testing. We're currently doing that at 11 sites in the southeast part of the United States. That project is just starting right now, and we're hoping that it's going to be as successful as our previous efforts in Washington, Houston, and Los Angeles.
Well, that's great. So thank you very much for speaking with us, Henry, and congratulations on your study and the publication. And talk to you later.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Dr. Henry Anaya is a research scientist with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and is on the faculty at the UCLA David Gevens School of Medicine. He's the first author of an article entitled Implementation of Nurse-Initiated Rapid HIV Testing at High Prevalence Primary Care Sites Within the U.S. Veterans Affairs Health System. The article is featured in this month's installment of The Real World of STD Prevention. This is an open access paper that can be downloaded from the journal's website at www.sdjournal.com. More information is also available on STD Prevention Online. STD Podcast is produced by Ben Westergaard for the Internet and STD Center of Excellence. This is Case Rietmeyer for STD Prevention Online.